Start of interview with MLM Real on the 5th of September 1968. I repeat, on the 5th of September 1968.
For instance, I was wondering where you were born and bred. Was it in Colombo?
In Colombo, in St. Sebastian Ward, sir.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, the old Westfield College Hall.
Yes.
Where now it is demolished. The corner house, that is almost state number 4. That house I was born, where I lived, I became a member for it.
And your father was?
Also from Colombo. And my father comes from a family from Damodakoda. And they come to the highest Maurice community that one can think of. And I can always go and claim or name 5 generations. For example, my father, I am Muhammad Riyas. My father is Miral Abba Malika.
Miral Abba Malika?
Yes. And my father's father is Chiran, that is Kulanda Malika. Kulanda, C-O-L-U-N-D-A-M-A-R-I-K-A. His father is Abu Bakr Abba Malika, A-B-W. And his father is Hatan Ali Mubarak. And his grandfather was Muhammad Ali Mubarak. So I can go for 6 people, 6 generations.
And your father was a businessman?
We were altogether businessmen. All of them were businessmen.
In what line?
Well, they were at that time China, where I was a household goods. And then textile. And then hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Some took to hardware, some took to textile. Some took to China. And in all those 3, they were practically the most popular men at that time in Peta. Say during the year about 1910 to 15, or even a little later than after 20. If you go through Main Street, you'll find board all with CM. CM Miral Bumaraka, CM Umar Bumaraka, CM Asramaraka, CM Ramadali, CM Yusuf. It's nothing but CM. It's a whole bazaar. But they did not cooperate, form into cooperation and form a different, a solid institution and set up. They did not have idea. Each one of their heads separately, but they individually helped each other.
Mm-hmm.
In financial, in our agreement. They were helping and they were practically swaying the PETA market. And they were very generous too at the same time.
You see, I was very interested in the growth of the Muslim leadership, so I say the leading family, in the 19th century in British times. Most of them seem to have developed certain status and wealth through business. Isn't that correct?
That's perfectly correct.
Which businesses do you think were most important? Gemming would be one, the gem trade.
And textile.
Textile.
Gemming, only they took it as a sideline later on. But they came to Ceylon as, what do you call it, mariner merchants. They were going from place to place. So the Arabs from north of the western side, I believe they came from Persian Gulf, most of them. Because I can trace it to the Persia in this way. Because most of our names are Persian origin. The nickname are also Persian origin. Some, for example, we call it Madan Fuad, it's from the mind. So Madan means a fool. Fuad is it was a cricketer. So we call him a Madan Fuad. But actually he's not the Madan. He's Madan. They came from Persia. The Persian word Madan, Madan is a town, from which they came, they converted as the Madan Fuad into Madan Fuad.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another word, you see. Another family spoken with ridicule, Kakusbas, Kaksabas. You know, Kaksabas means one who builds lavatories. But it is not so. He is Kakusbas. Kakus is a town in Caucasia. So Bas is a captain. When the sailing vessel came, he came down and he was a captain of the ship. And he landed and he settled down here. So that family comes from that. Look at 2 good names, how are being spoiled.
Isn't there a distinction between the Ceylon Moors and what we call Coast Moors?
Yes.
What's the distinction?
distinction. She is this. The Ceylon Moors were not very much converts. We were marine merchants and Muslims. We came and settled down. In many occasions, we did not come with our wives. We came and intermarried. Therefore, the father's lines were Muslims. And we did not hear the Islam was under, in any way, took up sword or any kind of defense, because the female kings will come back, and they gave us wives. And then we got married. So was the Tamil in the north. Now, for example, in Jaffna, you go there, more streets are there. Especially, it is named for years and years, but mostly. Because the Jaffna king at that time invited them to settle down, and when they settled down, they were given wives. And like that, but we were going on. But the actual this thing is that we are from Persia, Persian culture. We are not from the real Arabic culture, although we say we are Arab. And then the difference between the Cosmos and ours are this. Unlike Ceylon, in India, when the Muslims settled down in Cochin Coast in the future, you see, we settled down here, and our same people settled down at Cochin. That is where Malabar and Ceylon Moors are almost same. From the same area they came. When they settled down, they, at that time, the Hinduism was in ebb. And so Buddhism was not available at all. Christianity was not powerful. So these people was behaving better. And the behavior attracted those people who did not have any social status. And when they found that these people were very pleasant and very generous, they came and worked with them. And when they were, they said, we come to your religion. And they accepted Islam. That is the Agrampatna, Chinnapatna, and there are several Patnams and formed themselves into towns. Unlike today, formally it is not so. If a leader takes up a religion, all others follow it. It's like that they followed the religion, while we were otherwise. We came, we studied, we studied. And that is the only little difference and nothing else.
So what's the difference between the Cosmos and...
Nothing.
Nothing. The Cosmos are from Malabar.
South India.
From South India, but originally from Persia.
They are not. They are converts of Hindu converts into Muslims.
Oh, I see.
The Malabar people, that is we call the Maplas, and we Moors are from Persian coast.
Hey, coming back to your family, where were you educated?
Well, I was picked up and taken to Central College. At that time, a teacher Ratnam came here from America. He established a small school called Central College. That is a St. Sebastian ward. It's called Dam Street Corner. And then I studied down there for first or second standard.
And up who sent us?
S.C.K. Ratnam. S.C.K. Ratnam. He was an M.A. He got married to Dr. Mrs. Ratnam. And he came down. When he came, he was trying to get a house somewhere. He couldn't. My father had a house at Vellavatte Station Road, which he took it for 30 rupees without an advance. And then from there, he became friendly with my father. And to my father, he said, at that time, education in class is very backward state. Muslims are under the impression that if you learn English, that you will become Christian. Therefore, our forefathers were not given. But when my father came in, he thought that he would give an English education. And as he couldn't get any other school, he put me into Central College. I studied at the Central College for about 1 year. That might be somewhere on 1906 or 1907. And after studying for one year or one and a half years, I thought the school is no good. And the Wesley College was at the Borough. So I went to Wesley College. And when I went into Wesley College, I was put into middle third, and where 80% were Moor boys. And the Wesley College was full of Moors. And I did not like their way very much because they are rough. And I thought of getting into another school. So to get into another school is next to that was the Royal College. Royal College, the entrance is very hard at that time. Competitive examination. Fortunately, I had a second term. Second term. On the second term, there were only a few vacancies. I happened to go down there. On my way to Wesley College, I saw the entrance going on. I went in and I said, I got through the examination. Since then, that was about 1910, I was at Royal College until I left. I joined the 3A, a 4A, 5A. And I got through my 3A, Cambridge at that time is looked upon as a good examination, with matric exemption, on 1914, December I took it up, and 1915 the results were out. And after that I thought of going to England and qualify myself as an electrical engineer. My father was very poor, he couldn't afford it, but yet he gave me every chance to go. Unfortunately, I couldn't go during the war. War was very serious. All the ships that went to Mediterranean was blown up by the Germans. So it was dangerous. So I thought the best thing is that I will take into commerce. To take into commerce, I did not like to sit in a shop. I want to do something bigger than that. So there was a W.G. boss. He was an Englishman. I was a manufacturer's representative. My father told him that I don't agree to come to shop to take him in. So he took me in. He told me the first and foremost thing you must do is take the broom and clean the place. And I said, that is a very good job. He said, you're going to give me 50 cents a day. I did that job. So 3 days after that he said, no, now you get into the office room. And from there he taught me. He taught me how to book, how to do things, and how to be a commercial man. So he had very good manufacturers. And end of December or somewhere, two representatives from Switzerland came with Swiss embroidery, flouncing, edgings, and etc. When he came in, he was introduced to me and asked to get £2,000 business. I said, all right, 2,000. If you get the 2,000, what will you, how will I have? How will I stand? He said, I'll give you 100 rupees. He said, all right, I work with you. What do you think? First man I brought was A.A. Thami. He gave an order for 2,000, first order. Then Rutan Store I brought, another 2,000. And the W.M. Hashim I brought, he gave 5,000, 9,000 came in. And I said, I'll give me the money. He gave me the money. I went to Canada and stayed with the Queen. The man came running in it. He said, oh, look here, I'll give you much more. Come back, I'll pay the hotel, and then I'll give you 2 weeks holidays, then I'm paying them as well. And you come by. I came to Colombo and booked the order of 70,000 pounds for Honeywell. I got money.
Well, that's very interesting. Oh. If I may go on a slightly different track, could you tell me something about the 1915 riots? So where were you when the riots broke out?
I was in the thick of it. Thick of it. As a matter of fact, riot broke, and it slowly spread to New Moore Street. It is this way. It broke up in Kandy, Gampala, and it came to Colombo. And that was a fine morning. When that matter spread, the people at Bankshaw Street, you know the Bankshaw Street, and the Fisher Place, they broke a shop called Crystal Palace at Kager Street. That upsetted Colombo people. Until then it did not. They thought Crystal Palace proprietor, Mr. Yusuf Nana and others who were living near New Moore Street, that we will take control against them. What they did was, they were trying to attack the tram car that is passing in New Moore Street. When they were attacking, I was a small boy. I was about to go to school. Maybe about, I will be not small, about 18 years, 17 years. Then I was coming out and shouting to hammer. Addi, 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 and I shouted. My father, Brian, for the first time said, Depaite Harin, Depaite Harin, coming. That means you're mad, but you're coming. I said, Depaite Harin, and I went off. Immediately I went off. I was a member of the town guard. I put my uniform, took my bayonet, took my rifle. I called for 5 volunteers. And instead of 5, I had 7. With the 7, he will say, he will guard the place.
New Moore Street,
the street goes, you know, Army Street. It goes down to Wolfendorf, and then it comes further down to Kynos Gate. It goes through the Price Park, and then the Small Park, and that whole area. With about 7 or 8 of us, when Captain Benham came to ask what is going to happen, said, we can come. With 7, yes, and we can't do any reinforcement. Said, all right, if you can't do reinforcement, we will fight to the last. We can do it. Then at that time, at the Messenger Street corner, Abdulaziz Nam, he was a leader of the Muslim community, was named, his house was broken. So they planned sent me to go in down there. That is the Army Street Junction, Hendrik Hendrik Perasa headquarters, Ganja Bay. I went in down there with the three men, and they started taking stones. When I went forward, I spoke to the Maharaja. Your stones may hit us, and we will be wounded. But look at my five men are down there. Look at the cartridges. I showed the cartridges. We had about 100 cartridges in hand. In five of you, we have got the orders. But if you retreat to the other side, that is the other side of the road, tell stone we will take it out. But don't come near us. I explained them in the English. The people, Hendrik Kapoor himself, who was a Chandya at the time, came forward and took them in the way. And that matter, they are settled. Then I was asked to come to Ulpanjal. There too, of course, they were telling all exaggerated stories, all lies, nothing has happened. Then having done that, I came to...
Who were the
Muslim friends. They were excited. They were in a state of the nervousness. And they think that if they hear a murmur, they think it is the sound of the rifle or somebody is coming to beat. If a man looked at him, they said that they were trying to kill me or something like that. So I came back. Then Captain Muhammad was near most of Junction College. As we were down there, Mr. Akbar, then he was also in the army. He was now, afterward became Justice Akbar. He was in the Malay district. He came immediately in the car with four and said, look here, I am on slave island. This area is not yours, ours. This area is for the boys. Are you going to defend or not? Or am I to send my men in? If I send him in, you have to defend. I said, no, sir. We can look after. So what is the next place that you are going to look after? He said, go to. They were telling that, that bridge, some people were coming down there, crossed the bridge, Vanavalayas. Have you heard of Vanavalayas?
No.
They call it Vanavalayas. That is the tough type of people on the other side of the bridge. They are coming to attack the town. Then I went with about three or four men. I kept them guard. I keep guard in such a way, if I had 10 men, I'll put three in the post with the full rifle and everything to be seen, and I'll be on the center. The other people, I'll put them in the drain, and put their head up, so that they didn't know exactly how many of us are here. It may be a platoon, it may be five men, it may be no men. And that, I went to the bridge. When I went to the bridge, what do I find? Nobody is going to the bridge, or that is the grandpa's side. Then we crossed to the other Karami line. As we were going to Karami line, one of our men who were coming with me saw somebody meddling with a peda boat down there. He said, challenge him. That fellow is abusing. Abused our guard. He took his rifle and fired him and shot him dead at the spot. He chucked off, that made the Banwalayas not to come near about, and with the one cartridge, we stopped the Banwalayas from coming into it, and we saved the bridge, we saved the town.
Wasn't there a clash on San Sebastian Hill between a group of Moors and a group of Sinhalese?
It was pure imagination. I was the officer who was sent to investigate after 4 or 5 days when the matter was settled. When I went in down there to Akbar Place, I found the leader of that. And the leader is a trustee of this mosque. One Kader Sahib, if you will. Call him, ask what was the matter with it. Then he started talking rot. And he is the man who was having a sway in that area and controlling mosque sales. So he was trying to keep these people down and he wanted to be on the top. Mm-hmm. And therefore he was exaggerating the story that the Dobi class is going to attack them because of the Dobi quarter. When I went and investigated the matter, I found it is otherwise. They said the mosque is going to be attacked. Well, I said the mosque is attacked, is it being attacked? No. Then it's going to be attacked. How do you imagine? So all I found this man is equal. Now how to stop it?
But I thought there, on the first day, there was a clash.
Not there. There was a small clash at opposite to the Fort Railway Station. That is near about Crystal Palace. The Crystal Palace in this direction or the other direction. Not the center direction. I'm absolutely certain there was no clash at all.
What led the Sinhalese to start this communal attack?
As a matter of fact, I can give a true and absolute reason. Without prejudice, I would say. It was this. The Sinhalese was a backward community. So was a Muslim. But unfortunately, the Muslims were tradesmen and petty traders in every village. This caused the jealousy of the Sinhalese, what they call a Ralahami leader type. You know, he wanted to take the business into hand.
The Mudalali
type. So this jealousy was going on. As it was going on, there was not much of it, and the Muslims did not care, and they did not care. A certain incident happened in Congress. That was a pure incident. These so-called Indians, wherever they go, they put up mosques. And it was not necessary. So there is a mosque somewhere in Colombo Street and Ward Place, on the Ward Street. That mosque is not put up by the Colombo people, because we got the Miramaka mosque. These Indians, they're called Talapakettis, who went and settled down, they had their own mosque. In the mosque, that is the road that is going up and down. For a certain Perhara season, these people protested, said, as there is a mosque, the Perhara should not pass that road. And even if they pass, they should stop the meeting. But we were told at that time, the drum meeting is this. According to the tradition of the king, when the Perhara leaves and start the drum cannot be stopped until they complete and come back to the same place. So there was a clash on it. So these people objected. At that time, a certain state, he thought the best way is not to allow these people to go that way. Then they asked to go in the straight road, you know, that go to the Queen's Hotel and go down. But it's not a Perhara. This is what they call it, Carol. When the Carol was passing, they're not allowed to go third up, you see. Carol happened to go down that side. You know, the slope was so great, the pulling off turned towards that road near the mosque. Somebody from there pelted a stone. That struck one of the Carol boys' head, and he started bleeding. So, naturally, the crowd that was lost their temper, and they started attacking the mosque.
So there was some provocation given by the Moors?
The provocation was mostly given by the Moors, in my opinion, and this gave evidence before the commission says that Sinhalese are not to be blamed.
That's in Kandy, but afterwards, of course, it spread and...
It spread in this way, you know, jealousy, commercial jealousy. It turned up. But that is all highly exaggerated.
How many Moors were killed?
There may be, that is happened at here. That was the actual cause of the, you know, the reclamation road.
Yes.
You go to further down.
Yes.
There is what we call it, that there is a mosque also. You pass St. Anthony's Church.
Yes.
You go further down, there is called Thambi's Garden. There is a mosque ground built.
Mm-hmm.
There are all the Sandals, the people who are working in the harbor, who are stationed down there. These Sandals are hefty fellows, they are coast masters. They have been treating the Sinhalese laborers very badly. So they, Sinhalese laborers down there, they are called coalmen. They took the chance, they thought that the England, now Turkey is fighting with the England, and England will not do anything for this. Killed all of them. Killed about 8 or 9 of them. So afterward they were tried and they were hanged. What is that?
You said Thandele?
Thandals are the chief men. So, when that was reported to us, we were at demonstration. I know it was the government agent Fraser, Nombia fellow. He was in Kachari, he came for the inquiry. Then for the inquiry, he needs a guardian. And he and Honorable Abdurrahman and Mudliya Maratha, three of them, they wanted to go down that side. They couldn't get anybody, nobody will volunteer. I said, I will volunteer. I went with them to the very spot. Then when he saw the corpse, he said, this is enough for me.
How many?
About 4 or 5, can't tell you. This is enough, and he took that, and we got into a carriage. And then he went straight to Queen's House and told Sharma, things are going south of us, because he was the chief government agent. And what so also he took their Vashala, and onto Abdurrahman, who was down there. Could I have stopped it? But he said, no, I'm not going to go there.
Could I have stopped what?
By telling Sharma,
not to declare
more. Not to declare more. Well, we can still connect Boshe. Honorable Abdurrahman and Maraka, police court. No, Maraka. The Proctor Maraka's father.
Yes.
He was known as Mugliar in the police court. And the martial law was declared. And the martial law, when it declared, the order was given, shoot at first sight. After 6, nobody should come. You come, shoot. And they were not out to go. And then, we were given unlimited power. The police were taken in to their barracks. Police were not out, especially the Moors in town guard. We were given unlimited power. We can go and raid any place.
The Moors town guard were told that?
Yes.
Who gave you the orders?
Well, Abhi, who was it? I can't remember. He started Mech something. Brigadier Mech somebody.
Malcolm?
I think Malcolm.
He came and spoke to all of you?
No, he sent the orders from. Orders were sent to us.
Especially to the Moor section of the town guard or all people?
But especially to the Moor section. And the Malays on the other side, the Malay section. And only these two people were given all full power with the Punjabis to assist us. The strength of the Punjabis were not very much at that time. I believe we had only 250. Out of the 250, 125 stationed in Kandy, 125 here. Out of the 25, they had to keep always 75 with the barracks. Then only 50 men were available. So two or three of them with us carry more weight because they still were chap and they were firemen. And there too they did all this thing. Among the India regiment, they had the Muslim section and the Hindu section. They kept the Hindu section within the, what do you call it, barracks. And they allowed the Muslim section. The Muslim section were told that the Sinhalese community has been defied Islam and raped Muslim women and have burned the Quran and have burned the mosque. So they were rage. So anything you hear Sinhalese, they are like wild beasts.
Who had told them this?
It's a common talk.
Oh, I was wondering whether the British officers had told them that.
I believe the British officers would have told them for the simple reason. The Sinhalese can't talk their language. It is they who told them.
Could you speak their language?
I can understand them. And when they came, we were friendly. They came with us.
So how did you give them orders if they couldn't understand what you said?
What is the order? They look for us. They see what we are doing and they will do it. Their order is to use the butt of the rifle, nothing else. If they will see us speaking, if we discuss or if I take my cane and whack a man, he will come with the butt of the rifle and he will give one on the head.
So did you see them shooting anybody?
No. But one thing is the shooting was far less than what people say. I don't think. But one thing I can remember. At that time, Sierma, that is, Sierra Mounted Rifle, he was a Kirtland Colonel. He was coming in his horseback I was at Bullfontein Church, right, at the junction. Came and asked, how many cartridges? He said, I've got about 100. How many you made use of shot? Said, none so far, after 3 or 4 days. Said, look here, instruct your men. A cartridge costs us 6 cents, not to waste it. That every cartridge must take a life off. Look at there. Now these things that afterward prompted me to give up this, the military work, and to give up this, the government, save the country by bringing the Muslims and Sinhalese together and make them understand this is our country, we are born and we will die here.
You felt that the British officers were far too bloodthirsty?
They were not bloodthirsty, they are vengeful. They began to feel this. They said, we ruled you. Now we are in difficulties. When we are in difficulties, we are taking a chance. You see, this happened. Unfortunately, when British occupied Ceylon, I think in a treaty, they agreed to give independence, a complete independence within 100 years. Unfortunately, 1915 fell on that particular month. They said, you are 100 years before, so you have to clear out. Are they to concentrate their fighting against Germany or are they to concentrate on it? Then they gave the guarantee from there. After the war is over, we shall do the thing. It is that guarantee that we continued it and we got our freedom.
So you're not quite certain how many Muslims were killed by the Sinhalese? In the outlying villages, Berwala, that area?
No, Berwala none. Gaul none. Gaul. The Bazaar mosque was burnt. They were not done. Vangoda mosque was burnt. And shrines were broken. And of course little damages were done to us. But no murder has taken place.
Rambukana,
no murder. Only the mosque was burnt.
But weren't some of your people assaulted? Not raped, what I mean is assaulted.
Yes, both sides. You stick them and they stick you. You stone them, they stone you. Like that, of course, wounded, but not very much. Hardly anyone was murdered.
What about the military shootings of the Sinhalese?
All highly exaggerated. They did not shoot because here you are. How to shoot when you don't find them in the road? You are given the freedom to go up to a sunset. Well, after the sunset if you come, you'll be challenged. Who comes there? You must have friend advanced. You must go on shooting.
What about Crystal Palace case? Edmund Heber was on. Do you think he was involved?
It is a made-up story against the great man. Heber Vitarana doctor belongs to that Don Carlosa. He was a fanatical Buddhist. And next to it, his brother, who died since, what do you call him?
Dharmapala.
Was doing their very best to increase their business and to do whatever they like for a lower class of the Sinhalese. Because among the Sinhalese too, they are not very much on it. So he was trying his best to help them and to bring them up. And thereby they thought, being in Feta, being mixing with the Moors, so his business is there and this business is there. And Crystal Palace thought that they were his rivals. And his Crystal Palace story was all, I mean to say, it is a made-up story.
False evidence.
False evidence by Umar, which is pretty lie. The Patrick was shot for a lie. You know what really happened was, when these things were going on, Crystal Palace was broken. And you know, the second class injunction is Umar. There is a fellow called Umar. Now his shop is down there. He who gave the evidence. He was trying to take people from there to go and attack in the Sanandran treasury, which are further down there, opposite to, now the bank is down there. And this grew the jealousy of the Moors. Because in the Sanandran and treasury, William treasury. Didi Pedrick. Didi
Pedrick.
Pedrick came and opened a shop, and their shop became very popular. El Abdul Hamid, my father's shop, also Uqbal Abba, we all went to the second rank. So the jealousy was down there.
So they
with the jealousy, they put this man out into trouble, saying that he was the causer of it.
But I thought he had shot at somebody.
Yes. It's like this. Pedrick, who was shorter, he was in mounted rifle. At that time, a mounted rifle was fought, and the on condition is this way, it's called the mounted town. Those who have got the horse, some of them join, including old educated B of Distelmark. He had a horse, and Frederick had a horse imported from Russia, most beautiful and fierce and most handsome. He used to go on that horse. So having had the horse, he joined them. So when it's about the second day or first day of riot somewhere, or just before the martial law was declared, they were also exercising at the gorges. When they heard this, Frederick, instead of taking his horse and going back and giving and coming to see and defend the place, he at once came in his horse back to the junction, which is the consistory building.
Alone.
In his horse back. When he came, he found these people are trying to attack. So he left the horse. Perhaps he had a bow, and he had a revolver. He came near about his shop. His people told him, sure. He took his rifle. In uniform he did it, you see. And he had his revolver. That is a personal revolver. With that he shot point blank at people, and no one was hurt. And no one was killed. And anyway, these people who were drawn to break the Englishman and the DDP shop, they fell back, and that position stayed. After all, they concocted the story to say that he personally came and shot at these people. But the trouble arose in the martial court was this. He would have escaped. They brought down Norton to defend him. But you know what this man did was? He came forward. He was a quick-tempered man. When he said that, "Are you in the army? Yes. You are in uniform? Yes. You are under order? Yes. Guilty or not guilty?" "No, on that condition I am guilty." Norton couldn't do anything. He pleaded guilty. Now what's the next order? Martial court. As punishment.
Why did he plead guilty?
But it was told. If he did not come in uniform, he need not have pleaded guilty. And so like a fool, again his own lawyer, he pleaded guilty. So they couldn't do anything.
Why didn't he defend that he was preventing them looting?
He did not want to, because he can't speak well. He should have allowed Norton to do it. He's such a proud, foolish fool. That's what I call it, the face. But one thing, when he was brought up for the shooting, it was done at Echelon Barracks on the fatal number one. He came bold, he stood up. We were taken, two men from each company was taken. I'm one of those from the most exceptional age. Berger, all of them were taken before he was shot. And he was brought up, and the officer colonel was concerned. "Yes, are you ready?" "Yes." "March to the war." "Try that." question now. Then you took it up, of course. How they shoot is this, you know. Atra, five rifles are thrown up. One loaded. The other four are not loaded. Four men, five are picked up and you are asked to pick the rifle. And then you go and say that you took the target. Of course, all the point blank shooters who are selected. They say yes, how? They fire it up. And the man who got the bullet goes to strike it. So the robber knows who killed it. That's how the court marshal took place. He died.
He was not blindfolded.
He refused to get himself blindfolded.
Was he a type who was not only proud, but before this shooting and all that, he was a chap who was challenging the British and they didn't like him because...
He always condemned the British, but you know, even among the Sinhalese, he used to go to the Sinhalese sports club where people used to shun him. He wanted to uplift his community with the money and the pride that he had. Very proud man, but he's not a handsome man. Very dressed man. A very bold man.
What sort of horse did he have? Was it a white horse?
Yes, yes. What do you call it? Chestnut.
Chestnut.
It means, it's a pretty one.
Mm-hmm. So this chap Uma gave false evidence.
False evidence. False evidence says that he let the people came to break and to attack us, and consequently we attacked him and he repulsed back.
Uma was a trader.
He is a jeweler, small jeweler, what they call it, the fortune jewelry. And his shop is down there, still that Omar is down there.
His son,
such as him. He was living at that time at Sri Pina Lane, that is behind our new mosque.
How do you spell it?
Sri Pina Lane. Even today it is known as Rao, which is a broad road. It was a very congested area, he was living down there.
And you spell his name O-M-A-R.
O-M-A-R.
What about Mr. Henrik Appo you're talking about? Do you know whether he changed his name or he's still alive?
He changed his name. I?
Ganjanin?
No, he died. Now his son is carrying on. Now he's very rich. He sold the hotel and some name they call it. Elanga Parmal or something.
Ilangapurma?
Yes, something.
That's a Tamil name.
Some Sinhalese name, something similar to it. Now, that is Isurugiti Hotel.
Isurugiti Hotel.
A big building. He has bought it. He rented it on the Gangasari. And he was one of the greatest supporters of mine who turned out afterwards, and not a supporter. And he's everything for me. He's more than a father, more than a friend. He will spend for me, and he will give me cash, and he will work for me, and he did everything for me.
Well, that's the 1915 riot. I'm very interested in your personal career. What sort of influences, shall I say, what forces influenced your thinking? What made you enter politics? Why?
You see, I must think that I'm responsible for my own principal Hartley. The principal, C. Hartley, was the principal of the college. At that time, the college was in a small standard, only about 150 boys.
Right.
Then he had few men, and among them, he selected few to be his the favorite, of which I am one of it. For anything, he will call on me and to do it. This happened, Honorable Abdul Rahman was in the council, and I was at the college. At that time, Turkey declared war against India. That was on 1914. From there in October, I can remember it. At that time, the Honorable Abdul Rahman was asked by the government, saying that what is the position of the Muslims? Are you going to take the Turk side or the Muslims, the British side? He confirmed and said that it's going to be on the Muslim, the government side, that he's summoning a meeting of loyalty on the next day. And then there we will pass a solution asking the Turkey to not enter the war, but at the same time, our loyalty to the kingdom. And that's what I quoted in that line, Vatu Rasulullah Ulam Raminko. And in that, he wanted to find out who is the best. At that time, struck me, who was at Royal College, as a good person. He was as a secretary. So he phoned up Mr. Hartley. Hartley was a teacher by law. Then I was playing hockey. When the PM came and called me, Appu came and called me that I have voted by heart. Believe me or not, I picked that. Because you don't know what is happening at the Royal College. This day or this day, I would have done some mischief. So heart is sending for at about 5 o'clock or 5:15. When I'm in the hockey ground, come and see him. Anyway, I went in, then he pointed at the telephone. On the telephone when I took it, his project father, Antaraj Ramana, speaking. He says, come and see me immediately over certain matter concerning me. Then I kept it, and Hartley was looking at me. I said, why don't you go? He says, so I had to go walking, sir. Well, you can take my bicycle, so I can bring it back. I told him, all right. He opened his purse, gave me 25 cents. Go, do whatever you like. Whatever he says, do it. That is, you see, at that time, Hartley was the chief censor for the government. He was a very strong government official. So he was very proud to send me out, and accordingly we went in. And next day, myself and Makki Western, we got leave from school.
Makki.
And then we summoned the meeting, and we declared the loyalty. Consequently, from that day I came into political school.
And when did you enter the municipal council?
I think in 1926, unopposed. That is also a fine coincidence. You think it is not a myth, it is a whether it is a yarn or a dream, I'm sure. I never thought of going into the municipal council. I contested the Muslim electorate. That is the old...
1924?
Yes. That is what do you call it?
Not after that.
State council. I contested state council. Mark America, Abdukadar, Jaya and myself. If I did not come, there won't be any election. I purposely came in. I was the youngest and penniless boy. I said, I will contest you people. I had 1,000 rupees, managed to log it and started working. Mind you, from Hambantha to Jaffna, from Kalambu to Betikalu, I had to go. I had no cash to go and no money to spend. And yet, I worked it up and I came forth with a small defeat of 725. I made Marka Malika to run as fast as he can. The poor man had to spend about a lakh of rupees. Poor Kapoor has come all the way from Mumbai to support Abdul Qadir. Jaya, of course, is his merit. And the Jaya College. I have no merits. I have no money. I have none. Yet I roamed about and I managed to get it. And gave them a good run.
Now, when you were contesting the municipal council, that was not on the universal franchise, no, limited
electric. Limited electric. Some about, I think, 15 rupees. And the owning of property over 5,000 rupees.
Did you have to spend much on your election campaign when there was a contest?
You laugh at it, if I told you. But will you take it to be a young?
No.
No. But if such election comes in, I'm well off. Somebody gives me 100 rupees, 200 rupees, 300 rupees, every 3 days I have money. And I did not know what to do with the money because there is no expenditure. But anyway, I spend it. I have never spent 1 cent. You see, this, when I am to contest my Muslim electorate, my mother, I was talking to her. She was saying, come. She went and opened the safe. She brought up a muff chain, a long one, and a long two bangles. She said, look here, sir. This I have kept you to give you as a wedding gift. Now you take this, sell it, and make this for the money. Then I took it. Now we have to sell that. I have to take my car or the couple, both are contesting. I am contesting them. They know this is a family here. So I came to Umar and told him that the jeweler down here. Umar. Because he is a man who buys a cheap jewelry. I showed him. I said, it looks like gold, but it is silver. See? Anyway, I gave him 750 rupees. So I took that 700 rupees, 50 rupees, and with that, what am I to do? I bought a car, Ford car, the oldest that has no tires in the wheel. With that car I bought that. Subsequently, after 2 or 3 weeks, Roland sent for me. Gibbs at that time. He told, look here, I know you are over here, and you are doing it. You better give that car to us. I will give you a grey car. New grey car. Because they wanted that car for some purpose. For exhibition of the old. They took that and gave me a grey car that was about 3,000 rupees. With that I worked up with it. Without a cent.
Were there any books or any people who influenced the thinking? Apart from Hartley, any others who made you think on this, I say, different lines from Abdul Rahman and others?
Yes, the Muslim history. What is the greatest man that I admire is Umar the Great. How he served, how he worked, how he inspired, and how self-conscious he was, how ardent he was, all for the cause. So from that, my father used to speak lines of Muslim greatness. And he will tell us every time he speaks, my father speaks, some great man's life where something is being done for the benefit of the country, for the benefit of the race, for the benefit of the other. So that inspired me to a very great extent. And this, working with the people, came into me, I cannot say how, vital.
What about the Indian nationalist movement? Did the activities in India influence you?
No. It was all right for India. I said, yeah, come here, I'm against it. Now, for example,